If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, don't try doing single family, mobile home parks, multifamily, and storage. Pick an industry and really dominate that. And then later on, if you want to add some more to that portfolio, diversify it, then go for it, but conquer one.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, George, welcome to the show.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, the pleasure's mine. If you can give our listeners just a, you know, a quick bio on yourself, who it is that they're listening to.
Sure. So my name is George Abreu. I am originally from South Florida and studied to be an electrical engineer. And then somewhere in that journey, I decided I didn't want to be an electrical engineer. And that's when I knew I wanted to be a business owner, and I was very attracted to real estate. So started getting educated on how to do real estate investments, and then was able to do a couple deals, a couple single family wholesales. And then I really liked the fix and flips and did enough to where I ended up quitting my W-2, going into real estate full time. That was about 15 years ago. Opened up a construction company to bring that in-house to scale the fix and flips. Then the market crashed, hit really bad in South Florida. And that's when I made the move to Dallas. Great market, and did quite a bit as far as scale with the construction company. And we were doing maybe 50 to 60 fix and flips plus our wholesales. And then started working my way up, you know, started doing some small multifamilies, did some new development projects. And then about 4 years ago, was introduced to large multifamily syndications. And I fell in love with the concept and the fact that the scale economy of scales was built into just one property. And that's where I've put all my focus since. We've got a little bit over 2,500 units now, looking to get to 5,000 this year. And that's it, man.
That's impressive. That's impressive because, I mean, each of those moves is required building systems and people. I mean, running, you said you were running 50 or 60 flips at a time, or was that in?
That was in a year, but so we were also doing third party construction for other investors. So, I mean, at any given time, we had 15 to some point, maybe 25, 30 projects.
Holy smokes. Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of people. Do you still run the construction company or no?
Yeah, so I'm still the CEO of a construction company. I've got a good team where I'm not so involved in the day-to-day, but definitely involved.
Right. What was that like building a company from the ground up, and what were kind of your inflection points along the way?
You know, it's like you said, it's a lot of people. You need a team. And that was probably the part that I underestimated the most was the hiring and the firing and finding the right people, making sure they're in the right seat. And once I kind of got a grasp of that and realized how important it is to have your systems and your procedures, and then just making sure you've got, one, somebody that fits your company culture, and then two, making sure that you've given them the right tools and you've put them in the right seat.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And did you finish your engineering degree, or did you say you quit that about halfway through?
No, I did finish it. Okay. Yeah, the last year was rough. I didn't really want to, but I just, I did it. I did it more for my mother than anything. She wanted that degree.
Understood. And you're that far along, you might as well get it done. But yeah, as an engineer, I bet, for an engineer's mind, it's probably a lot more of a linear, you know, this is the person, this is the seat. Like, you guys think very, very strategically. And then for the rest of us that aren't engineers, it's a little bit more like, oh, I don't know, like, let's figure this out as we go and just see how it works. So I guess, you know, you went through this and you're no longer doing single family. You're doing all multifamily. What was the first multifamily deal you got into?
So it was a smaller deal, which I don't really suggest, but that's where it went, you know, we found a 36 unit. We turned it into a 37. We took the office, turned it into a unit. So it was a 37 unit, small syndication, but it was a, you know, a full transformation. We pretty much changed out the tenant base and brought the property. It was probably like a C minus, brought it up to a B property.
Why do you not recommend people go with that unit size?
You know, at least for, depending on your goals, you know, my goal is to really grow this, and the property management part of it, when you have that many units, you can't really, the property can't afford to have the on-site staff that you should have. So you got to be a little more hands-on when it comes to the management.
Right. And then from that point forward, now you're an active and a passive investor, right?
Correct.
Right. Okay. So from that point forward, what are the future as you mapped out the now up to 2,500 units, like how did you get there?
You know, from there we went, so from that 37 unit, we jumped over to 216 unit one. And then from that 216 unit one, we jumped to a almost 1300 unit portfolio. And, you know, from there, we pretty much definitely don't do anything under 100 units unless, I mean, it's got to be really close to one of our other properties and we're going to run it kind of together. But that's the path, you know, getting those 100 plus unit ones. And obviously that portfolio helped boost the door count up quite a bit. We definitely open to sponsor, to co-sponsor with others, which has helped us scale quickly.
Right. So yeah, how did you guys find the deals? How did you underwrite them? Especially, I mean, so you've done this in the last 4 years, which, I mean, there are deals out there. I mean, people are still buying stuff that makes sense, but how are you finding stuff that makes sense? And then what are you doing to improve the value of those so that, you know, it's worth more down the road?
Yeah. So we're definitely looking for your true value add deals. With the, having the construction company in house, we feel very comfortable taking on heavy lifts. And so those are the type of deals we look for as far as how we find them. In the beginning, we actually did a lot of cold calling. And we may have taken that from the single family side. And that's how we found our first two deals. And we started kind of building up that traction and getting deals brought to us. And as of late, you know, that's mainly how we've been finding the deals, is others bringing them to us, whether it's a broker that knows we'll close, so they bring it to us first, or if it's another GP that is looking for somebody to partner with to help them get to the finish line.
Right. When you guys partner with other general partners, what's a structure like that look like for you? Because I would imagine you guys want to be the active lead sponsor of a deal.
Correct. You know, most likely we're gonna be signing a loan. We're gonna be participating in the asset management quite a bit. Most likely doing the CapEx with our construction company. Most likely bringing some equity to the deal. I wouldn't say all the equity. You know, we got quite a bit of deals going on at the same time. So we always like to say, you know, we're not gonna be the only equity coming to the deal. We need others to chip in.
Sure.
And then it just depends on the other GP, you know, what pretty much we can fill any gap that's there. So if somebody brings us a deal and that's all they can offer, you know, is the deal, then we can fill the rest. Or if they bring us a deal and they can also offer equity, or they've got some net worth or liquidity to put towards a loan, we kind of just situate it that way.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool that, you know, people can bring a deal to you and you guys could really, you could fill all the gaps if you needed to, but you don't have to. And yet then that gives you the flexibility of taking down assets that you don't necessarily go find, and it still makes sense. So that's really cool. So when you guys, you have a plan this year to go from 2,500 to 5,000 units, that's pretty ambitious. I love it. I absolutely love, you know, growing, you know, exponentially. So what are you going to do differently this year that you haven't done in years past that's going to help you get there?
You know, differently, we've got more procedures in place, more streamline some of the processes where we don't get into a bottleneck situation, and then adding more pieces to our team to where it's quicker for us to underwrite a deal and know if it's good or not, you know, better ways of handling the asset management. So we're not just stuck on one deal. You know, we can start filling that pipeline which is something we've done this year, you know, constantly filling the pipeline and not getting stuck on just that one deal that's in front of us.
What does that mean when you say getting stuck on one deal, and then, you know, how have you overcome that challenge?
Yeah. So, I mean, someone that possibly hasn't built out those systems and procedures, or doesn't have a team, you know, they're going to land a deal, and all they're going to do for the next 60 to 90 days is work on that one deal.
Right.
Well, that deal closes, then yeah, you've got to do the asset management of it, but you're also going to have to start looking for a new deal if that's what your plan is. Right.
Right.
So then you've got to spend that whole time. So if you can figure out where you're working on getting that deal closed, but at the same time, you're filling the pipeline, you know, you're getting ready for the next, or looking for that next deal as well. I think that's where, what we're doing a little different this year.
Has that been a personnel shift or additional personnel, or has that been a just rearranging what people do and in what order they do it, or how does that work?
It's been more, one, putting in more structure, and then two, like I mentioned, the, you know, being open to co-GPs, having that. So finding the deals isn't solely on us internally. You know, yeah, we're going to find some deals internally and we're going to take those down, but at the same time, we're going to have a deal flow from other co-sponsors, co-GPs, whatever you want to call them, bringing us deals.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, because then you're not adding any additional expense as far as personnel goes to your team. I mean, you're not adding any more, you know, labor or anything else. It is just, and only when they have a live deal does somebody bring it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Because for every live deal that comes across, I mean, what would you estimate it takes in man hours for a live deal to finally get to your desk in-house?
In-house. Oh, man. Real deal, like ready to go.
Yeah.
Man, a lot of hours. I don't even know. Let's LOI-wise, probably, I mean, we don't send LOIs on every single deal, but, you know, maybe 20 to 30 LOIs to get one that makes sense.
Yeah, right. And how many hundreds of man hours is that, you know, equal? So if somebody can bring a deal to you and that side of it's done, I mean, that's huge. That's huge. That's a really, really intelligent way to, you know, to grow what you guys are doing. And I think the cool thing for you guys is that you've, again, win a deal, you know, if you're a smaller shop, you're going to go and co-GP and really partner up with the larger, you know, sponsor like yourself. And that's one of the things that you give up is the smaller fish in the aquarium. But, you know, on your side of things, when a deal comes to you, then you guys can take it as the lead. That's really cool. Have you ever had any, I guess, on the construction side of things? So you guys do all your own CapEx, you do all your own in-house construction. Are you able to, I mean, that's obviously a separate company.
Yes.
But does that help you kind of, you know, boost the returns on the apartment side, or is it just, hey, you know what, our company charges fair market value or fair market prices, and that's just the way it goes?
No, I mean, it helps in other aspects, meaning we can, one, evaluate the deals quicker and more accurately.
Mm.
Then we can actually complete the CapEx quicker.
Right.
We can start on it quicker. We can get it completed quicker. So pricing wise, it is going to be industry, you know, maybe a little bit less than industry, but that's not where the savings is going to be or the income is going to be made. It's going to be made in the fact that it's going to get done quicker. It's going to get done right. We're not going to get screwed over by the contractor, you know?
Right. Right. They're not going to not show up. You're going
right.
to know, you know exactly who to call. Hey, we're running behind schedule. Huh? Well, that must be the guy down the hall. Let's go talk to him.
Exactly.
Right. Now that's really cool. Now, do you guys do your own property management as well?
We do not. We're still doing third party. You know, it's in the future plan, but not yet.
Not yet. Why is that in the future plan?
Why? It's the same reason the construction company exists, you know, just having more control, more being able to implement really your own procedures. And we feel comfortable with third party and we've put in our own systems on how to asset manage and make sure pretty much manage the property manager. But it would just remove one more layer.
Right. That makes sense. Any other lessons, hard lessons that you've learned? I mean, you've done a million and one things, it seems. and you seem to have done them well, but what are any other hard lessons you learned that we should be aware of that say, hey, this is something I probably would do differently?
Yes, there has been is focusing and not getting, you know, I just talked about a lot of different businesses and doing a lot of different things and
right,
not spreading yourself too thin and really know what you want and focus on that.
Right, right. I love that. Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. George, let's jump here into the final four, and I may have taken your first I may have taken your first answer away, but maybe not. We'll see. First question is this: what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
It absolutely would have been that, but I'll throw something else in there. You know, and I talked about it here too. Don't wait too long to start implementing systems and procedures, even if it's just literally if it's just you. You know, even if there's nobody else on your team, I don't think it's ever too early. Now, don't get stuck in that. You know, take action for sure, but document that action and just make sure that there's a system so you can replace yourself.
Right, right. No, that's absolutely true. That's a tough thing to do as a solo solo shop. That's a hard thing to do because documentation and taking the time to write down what it is you're doing, it's like there's never enough time in the day anyway.
Yep.
So let alone taking the time to
record it or
right. Please. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Screencast-O-Matic or Loom or any of those sources that are, you know, free screen recorded. That's great. What is one way you are staying on top of your game?
Always educating myself, you know, always open to learn, always listening to feedback just not closing myself to any of that.
Right. Absolutely. When it comes to investing in the world, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Oh, man, that's an easy one. I mean, you know, the communities, these apartments we purchased, we're making it a better place to live in, better place for the community. You know, you bring a multifamily property that's a C minus or in really bad condition, and you go in there and you transform the property, that's going to help that whole community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. George, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Update our website quite a bit. I mean, if they go to elevatecig.com, that's Elevate Commercial Investment Group, so CIG.com, they can find a ton of information there. And if they want to shoot me an email, they can as well, which is George or Jorge, J-O-R-G-E. I go by George, but it's spelled Jorge. So JORGE@elevatecig.com.
That's awesome. George, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.